Hi, I'm Charlie, and this is Stereo Hysteria. Our March Artist of the Month, Phil Angotti, is a Chicago-based singer, songwriter, and guitarist, whose abiding love for 60s pop has informed the records he's made as a solo artist and with his band, The Idea. He regularly performs in the Chicagoland area, often undertaking accurate and heartfelt tribute sets to some of his favorite artists. Phil also co-owns an awesome guitar shop in Chicago's Wicker Park neighborhood called Avenue N Guitars, where I met up with him for the interview we'll be hearing over the next hour. But let's start off with a track from Phil's 2011 album, People and Places, called My Old Records.
Looking through old boxes from my past, never knew how long these treasures all would last. Here inside a room I hardly go to see if there's some things in hiding will not show.
Sitting down and talking with me today.
You're welcome. Nice to see you.
So you've been a regular on the Chicago pop scene for many decades.
Mm-hmm.
You're a Chicago native, right?
Yeah, I grew up in the south side of Chicago.
Okay.
So I pretty much lived here my whole life. I lived in Indiana for a very short period with my parents, but lifelong Chicagoan.
Okay. What was the pop scene like growing up?
Well, my first band was actually out and performing. It was 1980. It was a pretty interesting time. Like in my neighborhood, it was a very industrial, hardworking, blue collar town, and most bands were up playing heavier music, metal or Bob Seger type bar, mm-hmm. you know, music. So here we had these. I was still a teenager, you know, young guys in striped shirts and Beatle boots and haircuts, playing Stones and Beatles and Small Faces and Who
mm-hmm.
to a bewildered Southside audience. We had a nice little fan base. A lot of kids like us that were music geeks and liked 60s pop obviously loved the band. Mm-hmm. And there were a few bands around at that time that were doing it, but not many.
Yeah.
There wasn't really like a big British Invasion or even Beatle bands were kind of not really out and about yet.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that were big bands like Beatlemania.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is, you know, you had the Broadway, the shows and things like that. So we were doing something at the time that was very different. And a few years later, I'd started writing my own stuff and doing those shows live too.
Mm-hmm.
and power pop in Chicago was around. There were a lot of really good bands, and bands were getting signed, and then and that grew into like the late 80s, early 90s, when you know there were a lot of Chicago bands getting signed. And so it was a pretty good scene throughout. Not at first, but...
From the Idea's debut album, 1991's Sideways Smile, here's a track called The Knack and How to Get It.
Of all the stupid things I've done, this ranks number one. And now she's gone, and I just don't have any more fun. And I tried all I can, still don't understand. And I tried all I know, it only goes to show.
When did the idea first form?
That's a good question. I put out a record under my own name, Phil and Gatti, Songs About Riffs, in 1986. It was probably 1988, 89 is when I actually used the name Idea. Just kind of put it on a flyer. I had a little three-piece band. My friend George Krall was on drums, and a guy named Eric Boston. We were three-piecing around Chicago, playing places like in Gaspar's, which later became Shuba's. We played a bunch of clubs in Chicago. I can't think of all the names right now, but that was about the time we started playing out under that name, and then we released a cassette tape called Owl Stretching in 89.
Okay.
So that was the official launch of the Idea, as we know it. The band changed slightly. George, the drummer, went to bass, and we picked up a new drummer named Fred DeSanto, and we put our first CD out in 1991, recorded it with the Shoes in Zion, Illinois.
And then Short Order?
Mm-hmm. Short Order Recorder, yeah. And then we played a couple really cool shows. Material Issue, my band, and a bunch of bands played a big thing at the China Club because we were all on a CD called Yule Tunes.
Oh, yeah.
We all wrote an original Christmas song. That was kind of like the beginnings of the Idea, and we made a couple CDs together after that, too. That was the only one we did in Zion, though.
Okay.
It's called Sideways Smile.
Up next, we'll hear a song that's probably my favorite on Sideways Smile, called Other Plans.
Yesterday was simple, I could feel my way around. It's no longer yesterday, still I mustn't frown. It's no longer yesterday. And if you want to hear from me, I have to tell you honestly that I had other plans. Hope you faster, and I guess I just don't know of what it is I hope to be, where I'd like to go. And it's no longer yesterday. And if you wonder where I've been, I was only staying in, making other plans. Hope you understand.
Our 91 release was actually all over college radio because the record company at the time actually were very good about that. Mm-hmm. We unwisely failed to follow up on it and tour. We were mostly a Chicago band. We were playing at home. Occasionally we'd go out of town and play some shows, but we didn't really hit the pavement as hard as we should have mm-hmm. to follow up because we were getting good attention on college radio with that record. We were doing really good shows in Chicago. We were playing all the best venues, opening for really cool bands, and there was a good buzz about the group in Chicago through, you know, from like 90 through 92. Mm-hmm. And it kind of waned a little bit, and we still continued to put records out all through under the name Idea up until like 1995 or 6. Mm-hmm. It kind of dissolved, and I started just putting records out under my own name again.
Right. It seemed like it was a very gradual thing where mm-hmm. there were some Phil Angotti and the Idea records.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
it just became solo.
Mm-hmm. Like we did after Sideways Smile, we did an album called Picturesque. That was in a smaller studio. We did Afternoon Balloon, and that's when we joined a new record company called Our House Records. And that was a little bit of a shot in the arm again because they actually had a little promotion and money behind us. But again, it was more of a local thing. And then I made an album called Flower Bomb, but that's when I called it. It was Phil and Gotti and the Idea of, I think we put it under real small or something. Because then I started using other musicians and, mm-hmm. you know, and then I did a solo record called Juliet Foster. So right around that time, it was kind of going more just under my name again.
Okay.
Next, we'll hear a track from 1997's Afternoon Balloon, the first album to be credited to Phil and Gotti and the Idea, called Keep Me in Mind.
Before you start looking around for somebody new, before you start thinking that I'm not that good for you, anytime you needed help, I was there, nobody else. Again, she's done it before. She said, don't worry, I'll be back again, as she ran out the door. If you ever needed help, I was there, nobody else. If you ever find any time, just try to keep me in mind. If you ever find time you're thinking of me, please give me a call. I just might answer the phone or put my head through the wall. Yeah, and next time that you're bored with yourself, please write me a line. I'll even try to send a reply to tell you I'm fine. And if you ever need my help, you'll have to ask somebody else. If you ever find any time, just try to keep me in mind. If you ever find any time, just try to keep me in mind. And if you ever find any time, try to keep me in mind.
Shows that you've done in the past, you sat in with the surviving members of Material Issue.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was sad in a way that, you know, Jim can't be here to do it. You know, mm-hmm. I was a big fan. You know, I love the music. He's a great songwriter. But I was very, very honored that Ted and Mike thought to have me do that. You know, It was a little bittersweet, but it went well. We enjoyed playing together. And, you know, and before I actually did those shows, Mike and I had become friends, and he actually started playing in my original band.
Okay.
He's on the record People and Places. So that was really cool to hook up with those guys. Because when they were popular back in the day, you know, one of the reasons I recorded it at Short Order was I loved the sound and I wanted a good producer as well. We hung out with them a few times and we played the China Club with them. So they are kind of our contemporaries and, you know, they knew about us certainly and we were big fans of theirs, you know. It wasn't really any jealousy. They were very successful. We were certainly not as successful. But we even covered some of their songs back in the day because I liked them so much. So it was a really cool thing to do that with them.
Yeah. During the 90s, you were... At the same time as doing the idea, you were also in the Beatle Brothers?
Beatle Brothers was a big show, yeah. Yeah, it was a band that started in the 80s. Jay Gepner and myself as a duo. We're kind of almost like just an acoustic duo, like a Simon & Garfunkel, except doing the Beatles. And we didn't really even have a band until later.
Okay.
What made us popular was we did the Jonathan Brandmeier show, and he was a big radio personality in Chicago. And then later, Kevin Matthews and Steve Dahl and Gary. So we were on the radio a lot, and we were playing festivals And we weren't your typical Beatles in a suit wig band. We just kind of did our thing and
right.
We put a band together. So, yeah, that was all through the 90s and to
actually,
this day.
I remember my dad took me to go see the Beatle Brothers at a suburban festival. I was probably single-digit age, but I do recall kids were asked to come on stage and sing the call and response for Twist and Shout.
Yeah, that was at that school, right? Or was it? It might have been an outdoor show.
I think it was an outdoor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because we did one at a school like that too, where the kids came up and stuff.
Well, I was one of them.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
Here's a bit of a recording the Beatle Brothers made a few years back for Chicago radio station WXRT, a Zombies-inspired cover of "Things We Said Today."
You say you will love me if I have to go. You'd be thinking of.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with it. It's funny, you mentioned the Beatle Brothers. It's going to be our 30th anniversary.
Wow.
In May, we're going to do a show at Fitzgerald's, but yeah.
Excellent.
It'll be with the whole band, too. Jay and I will probably go out and do a couple, like our duo thing, and then bring the band out. But yeah, it's 2016. That'll be 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
From 2001's Flower Bomb, here's a song that name checks another 60s pop legend called Being Colin Blunstone.
He dresses like a dandy. He has a bird called Mandy. sound like Howlin' Bluffstone. Sings along without a care. Had a wife, now she's not there. Tries to be part of the scene, always hung up on a dream. Like a prince upon a throne, looking just like Howlin' Bluffstone.
Being Colin Blunstone, obviously there is a heavy Zombies influence in a lot of your songs, but this sort of takes it one step further.
Yeah, going way back when I was in a band called The Scuffle too, which was after The Fleas, before the idea. I was in a band with Donnie V, who ended up with Enough's Enough fame. Mm-hmm. And even though they're kind of a metal sounding band at times, Donnie was a very big pop fan. We used to sing the Zombies together. And a lot of people noted that I just naturally sounded a little bit like Colin Blunstone. And I remember that. And being a fan all these years, I thought, excuse me, it would be a good idea to write a little ode to him. And if you notice on the song, I also put a little nod to Brian Jones and the Stones by using a dulcimer as the lead instrument.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Brian and Aftermath Stones era.
Right.
So I kind of combined the two, and I told it as a story about a guy that really wanted to be Colin. So put some song titles in there. So I was a personal favorite of mine on that record.
One of the things that I really liked about the last couple albums is that there seemed to be, I don't know if you would call them autobiographical songs, but there are songs like Me and Donnie V that have like specific references to people and places.
Yeah, which is the title, yeah. Yeah, that happens, I think, as you get older, too. You reflect a little bit more about friendships and good and bad, you know. And, you know, when you're younger, the subject matter changes. You're always kind of writing about yourself. As you get older, I think you do get more reflective. Mm-hmm. And I think lyrically, I've certainly not only gotten better, I think, with lyrics, I think I've just been better at talking about myself without boring people too much. You know, you want to have an angle on it, too. You don't want to always just write about the same thing. You know? Mm-hmm. So bringing other people into the story is interesting, I think. I like to hear songs that people write about themselves and about their experiences and people that they know.
Right.
It's a good way to do it.
Here's another track from 2011's People and Places, called Me and Donnie V.
So tight. songs for a friend I never see. Just a song about me and Donny V.
Continued making music over the years, it seems like the arrangements have gotten a lot more expansive. Listening to Sideways Smile versus People in Places, mm-hmm. It seems like you've taken on a lot more auxiliary musicians. There's strings, there's brass.
Yeah, you know, it's like there's only so much you can do with the three-piece power pop, you know. And I love the Rickenbacker jangly, you know, sound. And I always will go back to that, you know, in tracks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I enjoy, like, recording, for instance, you know, I wrote a song basically on a ukulele and I put a bunch of just, you know, non-electrical instruments on that track.
From People in Places, here's that ukulele-driven song, inspired by his live tribute to Paul and Linda McCartney's Ram, titled Whatever Happened To.
Whatever happened to the blue skies, and we grew as one under the happy sun, honey, why so gray and baby blue? Whatever happened to you? To the records that had real grooves and played on grandma's TV set, sounded like a jumbo jet when the needle hit the grooves. Whatever happened to you? It makes it better when you sing along. It doesn't matter if you get the words all wrong. It's so much better when you sing along. La 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 la. Whatever happened to the little girl that I once knew? The pretty pictures that she drew in the early morning afternoons in school. Not the way it used to be. I think that anyone could see it's true. Whatever happened to you? It makes it better when you sing along. Doesn't matter if you get the words all wrong. So much better when you sing along.
I've recorded with upright bass. I've recorded with strings a lot. Carolyn Engelman from the Chamber Strings is a piano player, singer. She's been on my last couple records, so that was a nice influence, having some really good piano players play with me. And going forward, I would like to continue to do things like that, because it just makes the song, changes your arrangements and the feel of the song. So I'll probably keep in stuff with that.
It also seems like stylistically, there's been lately more of a branching out past the pop idiom, and so there are a couple of more country-influenced songs.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you ever consider doing, like, a full country album?
That's a good question. I actually have, you know, and it would be kind of like a present to my dad. I grew up, my mom was more of the pop fan, and my father always liked Johnny Cash and Buck Owens and Waylon, and so there's been a big country influence all my life. I listened to, you know, country radio as a kid. And I actually thought about that, so you never know, that could happen. There's one really strong country song in the last two, and I actually wrote one recently that'll probably be on something I do next. But there's a good possibility.
Excellent.
Here's a track from Phil's most recent album, 2013's Life in Rhymes, called Daddy's Country Records.
Well, Daddy's Country Records made a man out of me. I learned how to love and fight and swear when I was three. Mama didn't like it, but today she sure agrees. The Daddy's Country Records made a man out of me. When I was a baby, now I heard a lot of songs. Mama liked Gene Pitney and I loved to sing along. Till one day my daddy played me songs by Buck and Cash. And all the songs were country, coming from my Chevy's dash. Daddy's country records made a man out of me. I learned how to love and fight and swear when I was three. Mama didn't like it, but today she sure agrees. Daddy's country records made a man.
Tributes to that you've always wanted to?
That's a real good question. I'm a big Nick Drake fan. I'd have to have a lot of guitars on stage because the tunings are all over the place.
Right.
He'd be somebody I'd like to present because a lot of people do know him and a lot of people don't. I think the more people hear him really enjoy him. He's an amazing artist.
I mean, I think a lot of people just know Pink Moon from the commercial.
Commercial, right? Yeah. He's a mystical character and figure, but from a guitar player's standpoint too, he's a brilliant musician, and I think it would be an interesting show to get that out to people.
From 2004's Juliet Foster, Phil's first proper solo album, here's a song that points to his Nick Drake influence called No Moon Tonight.
Thank you. night is falling closer and you stare up tonight. Nothing's looking back at you, the evening's not polite. When the clouds are calling and they finally flow away, melting in the bitter blue, color in the gray. And there's no moon, there's no moon, no, there's no moon out tonight. Soul is softly searching for meaning in the skies. All you find for all your trouble is the raindrops in your eyes. Now you've been distracted by the busy lighted street. As you walk a little faster, you can't seem to move your feet. And there's no moon, there's no moon, no, there's no moon out tonight. There's no moon, there's no moon, no, there's no moon out tonight.
Night of Dylan, even though I did at Reggie's Rock Club one night. We did Blonde on Blonde, but it wasn't fully realized. I would like to do that in a bigger place, really rehearse and really get that one down. But I've always, I am a huge Bob Dylan fan. I would probably like to do something like that. Steve Marriott with the Small Faces era. I love the Small Faces. I think maybe doing Ogden's Nook on Flake with a narrator would be an interesting record to do. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But those are the ones that come to mind first as far as somebody I'd really like to feature. I think that would be really cool, hopefully soon.
You're kind of known throughout Chicago for doing a lot of tribute nights. I mean, just this year you've done Buddy Holly and Elvis Costello and the Rolling Stones and Tom Petty. When you're working half the time on your solo stuff and half the time doing other people's music, does one of them sort of inform the other one?
Well, I mean, I've always wore my heart on my sleeve with my influences, you know, my original music. You know, I've made no bones about the fact that it's a little bit, anybody who's heard me has always noticed I'm very throwback in my approach, recording guitar-wise and stylistically, you know. In some ways it's good, in some ways, you know, maybe it would pigeonhole me a little bit, but that's just kind of the way I like to record and present myself. So doing this music as I got older and really getting into the bands that I've enjoyed to play has been a lot of fun for me because, you know, when you do get older, it's harder to get a new audience to follow you around with your original music. You know, it really is a younger man's game, you know, and I get that. You still have your old fans that still enjoy coming to see you, but playing to audiences my age and even older, and then younger people even like to hear an album like, for instance, like this year's Model by Elvis Costello, to hear, you know, us play that, because we grew up with it when it came out, so we really know those records. But it's a lot of fun for me to do that. It all started with the Halloween show as You Became Somebody.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a lot of not only interest in it, but the clubs seem to hire us and like us doing this kind of thing. There's a few bands around Chicago, like I just played with Great Moments in Vinyl, that want to present records on stage.
Right.
Tribute Source do a little different thing where they become a band that night, and that's a very popular band. I've actually sat in with them a few times. But I've been doing like favorite albums for a long time, but I don't really have a name for the concept of the band. It's just Phil and Gatti does Ram, or, you know, so I really enjoy it. This seems to be something I'll be doing going forward, too.
Excellent.
Sorry, my voice is a little scratchy today.
Well, I mean, you were doing Mick Jagger yesterday.
Yeah, right.
You mentioned that you were working on something for vinyl coming up.
Yeah, so this one, Charlie, is more of a retrospective album. There are songs I've gathered from the last, you know, Phil and Gotti solo era, remixed, which is kind of nice because you always think when you put a record out, you know, as an artist, like, oh, man, I should have done this or I should have done that.
Right.
So I remixed a few songs, kind of personal favorites and fan favorites, kind of a blend. You can call it greatest hits. There are two songs on there. One is an older song that I've never released, and another one is a brand new song. So there are a couple interesting things, and a remix of one of my favorite songs, Too Late Tomorrow, which has appeared on two different records now. But so it'll be on this vinyl, and then there will also be a CD version too. But and then a new, brand new record of all new originals, hopefully by the end of the year, for November, December. So two projects coming out. Hoping to get the vinyl for Record Store Day. We'll see. Fingers crossed. I'm hoping, yeah.
So you never know
if it doesn't work. It will be out by May for sure, but I'm really hoping for April. It's getting mastered now, so.
Awesome.
Fingers crossed.
From 2001's Flower Bomb, here's the original recording of Too Late Tomorrow.
Hand on my chin, I was lost in looking in the glass of time. Or was it just the wine? It made me cry. I hope I'm satisfied. I saw myself an older man folding up his paper plan and hiding it in his hand. It made me say, am I okay? Don't say too late tomorrow. Too late tomorrow. My face crashed down as I had a look around upon the crowd. It wasn't really there, and I swear I don't care. I let out a laugh. Have I really lived one half of my life? It didn't feel like it did before. Can I? Tomorrow, too late tomorrow, too late tomorrow. Made me cry.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier Too Late Tomorrow, which is probably one of my favorite of your songs.
I appreciate it.
And that just sounds like the sort of song that just comes to you almost fully formed. Is that...
Yeah, that was one of those first of the, you know, reflective moments of that, you know, thinking about your past. And it was consciously, it was kind of a Badfinger tribute. Even the title has that. They have a song called Maybe Tomorrow. And yeah, and I love Pete Ham and Badfinger. And I kind of wrote that as like a Pete Ham tribute. Like, what would Pete write today? Like, I do that a lot. I put myself in their place. And I'd love to hear him sing this. And like, what would he sound like doing this song? Mm-hmm. And that was really not my first, but my real like Badfinger tribute.
Yeah. You know?
So when I do it, I think of it often. Like I hear Pete Ham singing it. You know.
Right.
So that was definitely a nod to Pete.
When songwriters do go out and consciously try to emulate someone that they really like, it always kind of ends up sounding like them. Like on another song of yours,
sure.
Unusual Me,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned in the liner notes that it's sort of a Curtis Mayfield thing.
Yeah, definitely with the high voice and the kind of just the whole vibe of that song, which that one is a little bit of a step away from what I'm usually doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a totally different, you know, sound and vibe.
Up next, we'll hear another track from 2013's Life in Rhymes called Unusual Me.
You go in the studio and you want to sing somebody. I just thought of the song You Were Right. That's my Tom Petty song. I really sound like Tom in that. Just the way the approach of the vocal. You know? Also, I also pick up different guitars because, as you know, I have my shop and I collect old guitars.
Yeah.
A certain model guitar will lend itself into a song. You know, say an old Gretsch or something you pick up that way. Or it will give you a little bit of a stylistically lean into something.
Mm-hmm.
I find that happens a lot.
How long have you had the shop?
Avenue Guitars has been here for 9 years. It'll be 10 in August. So
wow.
That's kind of... My partners, Tim and Leslie, and I are real pleased we're still here. It's a fun place to be. I'm surrounded by musicians and guitars all day.
It's not a bad way to go. It seems the perfect place for a working musician to
put my stuff.
Well, what's your guitar collection like?
I've got over 30 guitars. They're all basic gears are like late 50s, early 60s guitars. Mm-hmm. A lot of Rickenbackers. I have a really extensive Rickenbacker collection, maybe 13, 14 Rickenbacker models. That's quite a few old, four old Gretches off from late 50s and 60s. My acoustics are, 50s Gibsons, 58 Martin D28, a lot of Beatle-themed guitars.
Right.
Guitar Aficionado magazine is coming here Tuesday to shoot my collection.
Really?
Focus on my Beatles, so that's kind of exciting.
Very nice.
The other night I was at the Tom Petty show putting the guitars up. I was like, well, you've got the Tom Petty guitars. I go, well yeah, they're Beatle guitars. That's what he uses. So, when I do, that's another thing when I do the tribute shows, whether I'm playing the Zombies or the Birds or wherever, Stones last night, for instance, and I brought out my Vox Teardrop.
Okay.
I have the right guitars for those shows. And, you could do the shows fine without them, but it's cool for the fans and the guitar geeks to see that you're actually bringing the correct guitars for the period you're doing.
Yeah.
It's like when we do Beatle albums, for instance, we've been doing the 50th anniversaries. I'll bring the appropriate guitars for those shows, and it sounds better, and it looks cool on stage. And it's a fun way to share the collection. People get to see them, and they're not just sitting somewhere. A lot of vintage collectors either don't play or they just sock them away in your collection. You never see or hear them. So I get to use them in the studio. I play them live. I bring them to the store. I let people check them out. It's kind of fun.
When you're sitting down to write a new song, I can only imagine that there's just lots of chord sequences and lyrics in your head. Is there ever a time when you write a song and then you just realize, oh, that's something backwards?
All songwriters have done that, and I try to be careful about that. While I've been in this mode of doing all these albums, nights, and tributes and that, it actually has shut me down a little bit as a songwriter. I've kind of, it's not like I'm afraid to write. I just have kind of put it a little bit on the side. And at first I was a little worried about it, but I think it might be healthy to step away for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then sit down and maybe when I'm not doing so many shows in a row, I could just be a little bit more creative and not be in, wow, I just did five Tom Petty rehearsals in a show. Well, I'm going to sit down and write a Tom Petty song.
Right.
But I think that's a good point, and I do try to be careful about that. I'd almost rather have it just kind of come to me while I'm sitting around and not try to force it, especially during times where I am really focusing on doing cover shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been in what you call a songwriter. It's not a slump, but a little bit of a rest period. I didn't play a lot of original shows last year. I consciously took a little time off from that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of eager to get back. When I put this vinyl out, I'll do a few release shows maybe.
Awesome.
And then get in gear to finish my new record, and it'll kind of get me going again doing that. But doing them both at the same time, it would be a little tricky.
Yeah.
So,
what is your songwriting regimen, for want of a better word?
Good question.
Do you just sort of compile ideas?
I think so. I think there is a work ethic to it that you need to sit down and maybe, I'd like to work on something today. And then there are days that something will just come to you. You could be in a car, and I have a pencil and paper. I'll write a lyric down, or, you'll get an idea. Modern technology allows us to even have a cell phone where we can press a button, and there's a little thing on there, reminders or notes, where you can kind of sing into it.
Yeah.
Because it used to drive me crazy. I had two kids, and when they were really little, I had a little play school recorder for my son with a little plastic microphone. That was actually my songwriting 4-track, because I just didn't have time to sit down in a 4-track, and I'd be like watching the kids or doing something at home, some menial task, and I would like record with that thing. And I'd go back and press the button and laugh. I'm like, oh, my stuff is on this recorder. But, I just have a very basic 4-track at home that I'll go record on, sit. I do write notes. Like, I have a notebook around. If I have some nice, phrases and lyrics will come to you.
Yeah.
Not always as a full song. And I'll just write titles down. Mm-hmm. And that gives me something to work on going forward. So, yeah, I kind of do it that way. But, yeah, there is no one. I don't have a real basic way of going, here I structured, I'm going to write this song today. It's pretty varied.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sitting down and talking today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. And thank you for the great questions.
And that's all the time we have for this week's episode. I'd like to thank Phil again for talking to Stereo Hysteria, and encourage anyone who enjoyed the music they heard to seek out his records, or to check out Avenue N Guitars at 1823 West North Avenue. But before we go, we'll play another track from Phil's most recent album, Life in Rhymes, called My Life in Rhymes. This is Charlie, signing off.
1, 2, 3, 4. I always imagined a life worth living. I never pictured the worst. I always believed that a song worth singing would have some magical verse. life and rhyme.